Auburn makes a buzzer beater edition before classes begin. Welcome into this edition of the Barn Hoops podcast. As always, I am your host, Jacob Hillman, and we are tapped in to Auburn basketball and what's going on in the Auburn basketball news cycle right now, and really what's really new after the trip to Greece, that 4-2 trip where Auburn went 1-1, and was missing several contributors in both of those games. Four guys that we knew going into it were not going to play, and then in game two, limiting the two stars in Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton. And we're going to dive into kind of what some of this recent news means for those two guys as we enter the season. And of course, that news is the addition of Colby King in the backcourt. He was granted his fifth year of eligibility. He's part of that class of 2022 that is getting that fifth year, and he's going to take full advantage of it with the Auburn Tigers under head coach Stephen Pearl. Before we get into it, first of all, make sure you are subscribed right here to the Barn Podcast Network. Wherever you listen to your podcast is where, as well as YouTube, where you can also hit the like button, and you could also become a member. Join the Barn Podcast Network as a War Dam membership, War Dam video membership, or even the War Dam message board membership. So make sure you go and do that and get all this exclusive content as we approach kickoff between Auburn and Baylor, the beginning of the Alex Golish era. So much to talk about with scrimmages yesterday and practices and all the comments made by Coach Golish, as well as some of the players and the rest of the coaching staff. So excited for Auburn football season to get here, but we're going to dive into this Auburn basketball news and really how this changes things, but it doesn't. I don't think this is going to be really this all-encompassing change of how we expect things to go this season. So let's talk about Colby King first and where he's come from, because he is well-traveled. That's one thing I'll say. Beginning his career at St. John's, transferring to Tulane for his sophomore year, going to Butler for his junior season, and then last year was at Utah State, a really successful season that he had at Utah State last season, as it went 29-7 and made it to the round of 32 in the NCAA tournament. And King wasn't really – he contributed in every game, but he wasn't a superstar on this team. He was really a solid depth piece. He was one of the first guys off the bench. But like I said, he played in all 36 games and played 20 minutes almost. So, yeah, he played a very heavy presence in the Aggies locker room as well as on the court for them. So I really look at him as just someone that's experienced and understands their role. And that's what he's going to do. He's going to come in and he's going to look to add that depth and that experience. And while I think it's important to note that part of the discussion with Stephen Pearl has been this team that went to Greece, they had so much bonding time in the summer months. I think Narcisse Ngoy and Montez Roups-Devicius, they arrived beginning of June, maybe mid-June. So that's 2 months ago that this entire roster outside of King have been working together, getting to know each other, working out together, everything, living life together. And now you bring in another veteran guy that can really add to this puzzle and really try and put it together. And I think that's what's so important to remember is, look, this isn't bringing in a random sophomore or freshman. This guy has seen it all, going from the Big East down to Tulane to Butler and then to Utah State. So he's been at the high majors. He's been in the mid majors and he's been in the NCAA tournament. I think that's the most important factor to this is it's another player that joins the roster and has been a part of a very successful team. So like, just run it down. Taha Pettifor was part of that Final Four team in 2025. Kevin Overton was on the Texas Tech team that made it to the Elite Eight before it lost to Florida, and Florida beat Auburn in the Final Four. Thomas Dowd was on the Troy team that was so successful last year and made it to the NCAA tournament. And then Colby King, of course, he was a part of that Utah State team that made it. Buki Oboye was on Santa Clara. That man, what a wild game that he was a part of against Kentucky in the NCAA tournament this past year. So all that to say, there's a ton of experience as far as postseason basketball goes. That's not to mention Tahad and KO playing together in the NIT this past season. But I think that's what's most important to me is, all right, these guys have been a part of tournament teams, and that's not to mention George Kimball III, who didn't play last year but was on the roster with Vanderbilt when it made the NCAA tournament. So yeah, Auburn didn't make the NCAA tournament last year, but you've added a ton of pieces that really have and are expecting to make it back to the NCAA tournament, especially with the field being expanded and everything that goes into that. The expectation now is you got to make the tournament every single year and be one of the best 76 teams in the nation. So Colby King, last year, averaged 7.5 points per game and 3.3 rebounds per game. So again, not flashy numbers, but they're solid, and he's going to be part of that depth that I would say was a question mark. I think it's 2 weeks ago, maybe it was last week, we discussed this new rule, or really this court ruling, because again, that's all this is, of allowing these class of 22 guys to return for a fifth year and try and make waves. And I just didn't know if Auburn was going to make a move, and this is one that made sense, just adding some depth here and or maybe at the wing position. But this is definitely a backcourt to provide a little bit of extra breathing room behind Taha Pettifor and Kevin Overton. And look, the fact that he is a good rebounder and he can score from three, from the free throw line, and getting to the basket, those are all things that you're looking for out of a backup point guard. And he can play a little bit of the two as well. And I really, really am looking forward to just how this all pans out. Because again, we did not get a good look at this in Greece with Kimball III and Rufus Devicius and Ngoy and them being out, as well as Owen Freeman. That was the name I was forgetting. Freeman's, of course, been a part of NCAA tournament teams in his career. With all that being or happening a couple weeks ago, it just makes me really look forward to that Florida State exhibition and whatever the other exhibition game will be for this Auburn team, and learning about this rotation and what it really is going to be like. We learned, I think, a lot about those individuals that did play. We know about Tahad and KO. They played lights out in that first game. But then, man, Thomas Dowd, Adam Olson, Buki Oboye all looked awesome. Caleb Williams was a bit of a surprise. So with that, that brings it to the next point of how this impacts the rotation in the backcourt at the one and the two positions. And really, I think that this can also help at the three with Montez Rufus-Devicius. Again, he's the one true wing on this team. And that was the direction I thought maybe Stephen Pearl and this staff would go when trying to grab one of these fifth-year guys. But I think this is the next best option to really help in that backcourt. So listen, there's no doubt about it that it's going to be Taha Pettifor and KO leading the show when Auburn tips off its season in November. And I mean, I would imagine that's going to be the case throughout the entirety of the season. And before Colby King signed on, it was a case of, all right, you got George Kimball III back there, and Rustavicius can probably he can move around with the basketball some. But then it's Simon Walker and Blake Mychalek, who obviously Walker was hurt for a majority of the non-conference last year, did not get the reps that the staff would have liked. You've got Caleb Williams as well, who's a true freshman and very well may surprise some folks, but definitely someone you want to develop and make sure that he's ready for prime time when that time does come. And then Blake Mychalek, who he's brought energy. He's energy off the bench, but it's obvious the limitations he does have on offense, especially the shooting isn't necessarily all there. And he does turn the ball over more than I think the staff would like. And that showed in Greece. And that second game, and that specifically the second half when Kevin Overton left, it was Blake Mychalek and Simon Walker really running the show. Well, Caleb Williams thrown in there a little bit. And Thomas Dow did as well. But that was by necessity when Auburn was struggling. And part of that was Mychalek and Walker just – I don't think they just had – the chemistry was not there with Dowd and Oboye and Olsen and Williams. And all that's to say is it's going to feel a lot more comfortable when you're starting with Tahad and KO, and then you're bringing King and Kimball III off the bench, two guys that have proven it at the mid-major level, especially, but have had the high major aspirations as well and been on those rosters as well as in the NCAA tournament. You feel more comfortable about that experience, about that leadership, and just about them just taking the ball up the floor. That's not to say a guy like Simon Walker or Caleb Williams could emerge by the time we get to November or December, and that's really when it needs to happen before SEC play gets started and they insert themselves into the lineup and are making minutes, not into the lineup, but into the rotation. But I think at this point, you got to play it safer than sorry and make sure you are primed for success. And unfortunately, I just don't think that I don't think the staff feels comfortable. I know I wouldn't if you're having to rely on Mychalek and Walker just because, again, I think Walker can develop into something that you rely on, especially with how good he is shooting the three. But it's just not something you want to do at this point. At this stage in his career, it might be something that is actually worse for him. So I think really letting him get reps in garbage time in November and December that he didn't get last year will benefit him a lot more than, hey, buddy, you're going out there the last or maybe the from the 8 minute mark to the 4 minute mark of the first half and what's look, it's a little bit tighter against insert mid major team here that Auburn should be blowing out, but we need you to step it up and create some separation in the scoreboard. That's not the pressure you want to put on these guys that are trying to develop, and I speak of Simon Walker and Caleb Williams. You obviously want them in the last 5 minutes of a game that Auburn's up by 30 or 40 points, even 20 or 25. That's when you want them to really come in and learn the system and feel what it's like to play in front of a Neville Arena crowd. And look, if you're doing it at on the road, even when you get to that point or in a neutral site environment, that's when you want that to happen so that they can really learn from that. So that's on the bottom part of it. I think you're trying to get Walker, Williams, and Mychalek to develop as much as possible before SEC play and figure out who's really the emergency guy. Mychalek brings value in his defensive energy and his effort. He's just got to be smart and not foul. He does a great job at drawing fouls, but sometimes he doesn't do such a good job at not fouling. That can be a trap he falls into at times. So when he does that and he gets a groove, then he's a worthy substitution late in games when maybe someone else is in foul trouble or there just needs to be something just to mess with another point guard's head. And then, like I said, Walker and Williams, I think just their ceilings and the potential they have is definitely up there with a player like that can really contribute. Maybe not this year, but the year after. So then it comes down to I think Kimmel the third and King and how they are going to rotate in and out and maybe play together as well sometimes. But I think really another factor to this is that Kimmel the third was injured going into this Greece trip. And he was injured last year. So it's the same deal with Owen Freeman. This is really just precautionary. But the fact that they are taking precautions is a sign that, okay, there's something to it. It might be really nothing. Like, hey, look, if that were the season or the third game of the year, fourth game of the year, whichever, wherever it lands against Arizona in Neville Arena, then yeah, he'd be playing. Or if it were an NCAA tournament game or SEC tournament game, yeah, he'd be playing. That's probably the case. But it's still just, it lingers in your mind. Okay, there's history here, and they're sitting out. That's something that comes into play. So I really think that Kimmel III is still going to be that first guy off the bench to when Pettiford or Overton go off. But I don't think King is going to be far behind. I think they will likely end up playing a similar amount of minutes. Something that I've really thought about over the last several seasons and tried to kind of recognize and see is the minutes that Auburn's best players play, because it feels like there are times when, I don't know, Jani Broome, I don't know, and he might have ended up this, that it probably changed a little bit when you get to the postseason, but I don't feel like he played a significant amount of minutes. He obviously played more than just about anybody, but it just wasn't, he averaged 30 minutes per game, and that's including the postseason. So to me, that tells me he probably averaged between 25 and 28 in the regular season. And I mean, then you look at, Denver Jones averaged 28 minutes per game. That was the second highest, tied with Miles Kelly on the team. Auburn historically has tended to rotate guys in and out. Not a lot of guys are playing 35 to 40 minutes a game in since Bruce Pearl was the head coach. Last year, that was different. And that's kind of the point I'm going with this. Keyshawn Hall, Top Pettiford, and Kevin Overton each average over 30 minutes per game. Hall was 33, Pettiford was 32, Overton was 31. Sebastian Williams Adams averaged 27. And I mean, I don't know, there's another good example, like 21, 22. Let's see what Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler did. But really, guys are rotated in and out. Jabari Smith averaged 28 minutes per game. Walker Kessler was 25. The two of the best players that have walked through those Neville Arena doors, 28 minutes and 25 minutes per game. So was last year the changing of the guard and everything, was that one of those things we'll look back on like, okay, Steven wants to play his stars a lot, which is very important. And I think we'll learn that early on, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on, especially with the addition here of Colby King. There's a reason for that. Was it something that he intentionally tried last year and decided, nah, I don't think that's something we want to continue, and that's why we're adding as much depth as we're seeing? I don't know. That's something I want to keep an eye on and probably keep tabs on throughout the season, is how much are Tahad, KO, and maybe Thomas Dowd, Narcisse Ngoy, depending on, again, it depends on how these guys perform in season, but I feel pretty confident about those two guys being pretty solid and probably starters for the Tigers when we get to November. So those are the ones that I'd like to track. See, all right, are they playing 30 to 35 minutes per game? Because if they are, that's certainly a change in philosophy from the Bruce Pearl era. prior to last season, and definitely something to we'll have to watch for in the regular season. So I don't think really this Colby King addition changes really a ton with the hierarchy. I think he's going to give George Kimble III kind of a battle for that backup guard position. But overall, I can't say there's anything wrong with adding someone else and adding some depth here in the backcourt, especially in a spot where I think it can't hurt and it's helpful. So that's where the roster is. And I guess finally, this roster should be finalized. I mean, it's hard to say for sure. It feels like any moment there could be another signing or another court ruling that tells us, oh, actually, this is another group of eligible players that you can go sign. But we are a week into classes almost. So honestly, that probably isn't going to happen. It'd have to happen very soon if it were to be the case. So now let's get into some discussions around the nation and what others are saying about this basketball team. And I came across this late last week, maybe this weekend, and it was ESPN, Myron Metcalf. He wrote his projections for every SEC team's floor and ceiling this upcoming year. And I thought it was really interesting because I agreed with a decent portion of it until I got to Auburn. And listen, that could be my bias stepping in, but we'll get into it of why I think I disagreed with it a little bit. So really starts with chalk at the top. He believes that Florida is going to be really impressive again. And I can't disagree. I would definitely expect the Gators to be the SEC champions, but right behind him, he's got Texas and Arkansas and Tennessee, top four teams in the SEC. I don't disagree with any of that. I don't disagree with the order with it at all. The interesting thing that he's got is, like I said, the ceiling and the floor. For Florida, 40 wins for a ceiling. That's an absolute ceiling. That's a perfect year. And then the floor is at 30. So that's where we get into Auburn. So like I said, he's got Florida, Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, 1-4. Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky, Alabama, 5-8. I think Alabama is better than Kentucky at this point, in all honesty. And Vanderbilt or Missouri, I just feel like history tells me one of them is due to not be as good as everyone's saying. I lean more towards Vanderbilt for that than I do Missouri. I think Missouri is going to be really good, but Mark Byington's a good coach. It could just be a new era for the Commodores. And then that brings us to Auburn. Number 9, Georgia is ahead, and 10, Texas A&M is ahead. And that brings you to Auburn. And his ceiling for the Tigers is 25 wins and a sixth place finish in the SEC and making it to the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. And the floor he has at 20 wins and an SEC finish of 11th place with no NCAA tournament appearance. And I think I probably agree with the floor, but I do think the ceiling's a little bit higher. I think Auburn can certainly sneak its way into a top four seed in Nashville at the SEC tournament. I think this Auburn team, the schedule is just not what it was last year. Man, that schedule was tough last year. Just if you were not ready to go from the season opener, you were going to struggle in the non-conference. And that was the case. And that's why Auburn did not have the best record I mean, going into SEC play, it was a really like, all right, Auburn's got to capitalize now because of how tough some of those losses were. It wasn't like Auburn had just this brutal record, but let's see. You've have 1, 2, 3, 4 losses, but the four losses were by 20 plus points. That's where things got really, really hairy. And then Auburn does start off SEC play 0-2 with an overtime loss to Georgia, and then the Keyshawn Murphy buzzer beater that didn't actually happen against Texas A&M. That was a tough start. And then Auburn bounced back with a big win against Arkansas, but then immediately loses at Missouri. So Auburn was just off to a bad start last year, based off some of those non-conference games and then the start of SEC play. And really, I think just partially is what cost them down the stretch. Of course, down the stretch was a different animal, where you had that five-game losing stretch to Tennessee, to Alabama, to Vanderbilt, to Arkansas, to Mississippi State. Four of those teams, very good, very, very, like, tournament teams, highly ranked. And then Mississippi State, just a cherry on top of how much of a struggle it had been. So I really, really, really point to the fact that I think the schedule is going to shake out much more in favor of Auburn. I think two losses, again, we're talking ceiling. I'm not talking expectation. I'm talking ceiling. I think two losses in the non-conference is a fair possibility for Auburn. So that's two less than last year. And, you know, you look at that Arizona game. That's a winnable game because it's in Neville Arena. You look at the Players Era 8. That's where things get, okay, well, who knows what that's going to shake out to be. But you're probably playing Kansas in that second game. And then if you lose that one, then you're getting the loser of Florida and Houston. So you got to steal a game in the Players Era to avoid being incorrect here, because between the road trip to Clemson and the Nashville trip to face Wisconsin, those are games that I think between Arizona, Clemson, and Wisconsin, even if Auburn is hitting its ceiling, I think you lose one of those games, and then you lose one in Vegas as well. But that could all obviously change if Auburn goes out and beats an Arizona game leading into that Players Era 8. Boy, that could be some big momentum. And if heaven forbid Auburn has a 3-0 week in Vegas, then you're talking jack that ceiling up to 30 plus wins. So I think this team is going to take a little bit longer than that to really get ready. So I would expect a loss in Vegas, and then one of those other high major teams is going to trip you up, and that's going to be a great learning experience. And then in the SEC, we've talked about the schedule and what to expect there, but I really, really, really think that this is a much better setup for Auburn as far as the flow goes. But that's all dependent on how you start the season. So I mentioned, or the conference slate, I mentioned the two teams in front of Auburn were Texas A&M at 10 and Georgia at 9. That's where this factors in to the beginning of this schedule. Partially because Georgia comes back to Neville Arena. You go to Texas A&M, his second year under Bucky McMillan. But then you don't play him again. Then it's, you're just waiting and seeing. If you can go 2-0 against those teams, one, just going starting 1-0 on the road at Texas A&M, and then two, getting your get back on Georgia after last year, a dramatic loss in Stegman, and you didn't get a chance to try and avenge that loss because of the new schedule format. That would be huge to try and leap those teams and finish in the top half of the league. Because again, between Alabama, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt, or maybe even a Tennessee or Arkansas, I doubt those two teams. And I don't want to say that there's a possibility of Texas and Florida being really disappointing and falling out of the top half. But from looking at Myron Metcalf's rankings from 3 to 8, I can see any of those teams disappointing and falling into that 9 to 10, maybe 11 range. Whereas Auburn, I think, I feel confident that they'll finish above Texas A&M and Georgia this upcoming year. Just don't think Texas A&M has the roster this year, and I just don't know about Mike White at Georgia. It's hard to feel confident about that. So you start off that SEC slate. Hey, even if it's 2-2 and those two wins are at Texas A&M and Georgia, you are running back to Neville Arena to face Ole Miss, and then the stretch that you can potentially capitalize on, because home against Ole Miss at Vanderbilt will be tough. Who the heck knows what LSU is going to look like, but you travel there, and then you host Mississippi State. 3-1 there is sitting right there. And if you can surprise Vanderbilt, 4-0 is on the table. So that's where I think Auburn can really exceed this ceiling that Myron Metcalf has set. 25 wins. I don't know. I just think this team is talented enough, and the schedule shakes out well enough that Auburn can kind of get closer to that 30 number. I'm not saying it's going to be 30. I think 28 is a fair ceiling for this team. And again, with the floor, I kind of don't disagree. 20 wins, yeah. I could see things faltering and not working out. And if you get off to a bad start in league play or lose 4 non-conference games again, then yeah, that's going to be tough. So that's where the first of, I'm sure, many national projections are going to come in. And just wanted to kind of break that down. And it's interesting to see the thoughts on the other programs in the SEC. Like I said, that Texas A&M, Georgia, I just don't see Auburn finishing behind those two teams. That's where I'm at with it. Below, just to finish it out, 12th is Oklahoma, 13th LSU, 14th Mississippi State, 15th Ole Miss, and 16th South Carolina. So not a ton to be surprised about there. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode of the Barn Hoops podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Again, Colby King, add it to the squad. I don't think he's going to shake anything up, but it just adds a little bit of strength to this backcourt led by Tahat Pettiford and Kevin Overton. And then the nation is starting to get ready for some college basketball, even with football season right around the corner, which make sure you're subscribed right here to the Barn Podcast Network for all the Auburn football fall camp. And as we lead into it, the season opener, notes, nuggets, opinions, takes, everything that you could ask for right here on the Barn Podcast Network. So be sure you're subscribed. Join on YouTube as a member, and you won't miss any of the exclusive videos coming your way over the next month and a half. So excited to bring it to you as again, hey, we're less than 3 months from tip-off, and then we'll start to learn more about this non-conference schedule. That's got to be coming out soon. It's got to be, right? And then we'll get to SEC tip-off in October and who we expect to see representing the Tigers with Stephen Pearl. So excited to bring it to you. But again, we'll talk next week. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Barn Hoops podcast.